Ramchal's continuing a discussion of the various types of people who have gaiva or vanity. V'yimotzu geyim acherim, there's still another kind of vain person, shetishar gavosan kvura belibam, whose vanity remains buried in their hearts, lo yetziyu ala ma'aseh, they never show it in action. Aval yachshivu bilvavam, internally in their hearts, they believe shekvar hem chachamim gedolim yodei hadvarim lamitam, they believe in themselves that they are the only wise people who know the truth about things, and therefore v'shaloi rabim yachkiru kamoyim, since no one else is as wise as they are, al kein lo yashisu level divrizulosam, they pay no attention to others' advice or others' opinion, v'choshvam, because they believe ki mashikosh aleihem, that anything that is too difficult for them, lo yienok el acherim, would not be simple to another person. So how is somebody else possibly going to be of help to them? Umasha sichla mara lahem kol kach boruhu, and whatever their mind tells them, whatever they think is so clear to them, the kol kach poshut, and is so obvious, ad shelo yochushu ledivrei achilkim aleihem, they will not pay any attention to anyone who has a differing opinion, im rishonim ve'achronim, whether they are authorities earlier to them or contemporaries, the Sufik Enes from Asosam, they are never in doubt about their opinion. Here we see why Rashi says that when Hashem said, Nasa Odom, let us make man, Rashi brings down the Midrash. What do you mean, let us make man? Who is Hashem asking for help? So he says, Hashem took counsel with the Malachim. He says, what sense does it make to take for Hashem to take counsel with anyone, including the Malachim? He says it doesn't, but Hashem intentionally did this to show that even the wisest of all should nevertheless take counsel with those who are much inferior to them. It is a practical thing that people who are Bala Gaiva will be offended if someone asks them to take counsel from someone else. Practical in the sense that we see it when somebody asks a doctor to call in a consultant. Right? A good doctor will say, yeah, who would you like to ask? And is willing to ask anyone. I had a situation in when I was 4 months into the residency of psychiatry, when I had a call from someone in New York, a mishpocha, who asked me about someone in the family who was had gone into a depression, and since I was already the psychiatrist in the family, what they should do about it. And I said, look, don't ask me, because I'm very new into this. Well, who should we see in New York? Well, I had no idea who should see in New York. At that time, I was reading the book on somatic therapies by Lothar Kalinowski, who was the international authority on physical treatments of depression. And the book was lying on my desk, and I knew that Kalinowski was in New York, so I said to this caller, I said, try and get an appointment with Kalinowski. Well, about a week later, I get a call from the secretary that there was a long-distance call from New York, and Dr. Kalinowski wanted to talk with me. So he gets on the phone, and he says, I've seen this patient who you referred to me. I believe that the depression is very profound, and I think it would require a few electroshock treatments to get it moving. What do you think? And I said, Dr. Kalinowski, you've got the wrong idea. I am not a psychiatrist. I am a first-year resident, and the only thing that I know about electroshock treatment is what I read from your book, so, and I'm not the one to ask. So Kalinowski says, oh, yes, he says, I know electroshock well enough, he says, but I think you know this patient. Well, it happened that I did know the person, and I knew something about him, and I said, look, I happen to know this person. He's a gentleman who is very bright. He's a rabbi. Very bright, very competent, but fantastically tormented with feelings of inferiority. Really deep inferiority feelings. And he's had them always. I said, I'm just concerned that if he has electroshock treatments, he may turn around and say, ah, now that you've done this to me, you can't expect me to perform. I'm afraid he might use them as part of his defense mechanisms against assuming responsibility. So Kalinowski says, ah, yes, 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 you are right. So later on I went into the clinical director and I said, guess who called me for a consultation? Kalinowski. So I told him about it and he laughed and he said, you know, the only one who would feel comfortable in calling a first-year resident for a consultation is the man who wrote the book. Right? He doesn't have to worry that his accepting advice from somebody far inferior to him is somehow going to be a reflection on his competence. Now, you see this, that when a physician feels adequate and good about himself, and somebody says, a consultation, say, sure, who would you like? But you take a person who is dealing with feelings of low self-esteem and is defending himself with vanity, as we've said, that vanity is a defense against low self-esteem. And you tell that person, call in a consultant, you get a lot of resistance. You don't like the way I'm handling the case, go see somebody else. If they do accept consultation, it's going to have to be from somebody who's chief of the department in some university, and bring in a specialist from out of town. I'm the best there is in this town. Right? And you see that attitude of conceit and vanity, which he refers to here, refusing to accept advice from anyone else. And that's why Rashi brings down this definition, this explanation of Nasa Adam. Hashem certainly did not need advice from anyone. And yet, humbled himself to ask counsel from the angels simply to demonstrate that no one should ever consider oneself above accepting advice from others. The Rebbe Reb Heschel uses that Rashi as an explanation as to why the Talmud says that a person who is vain, a Baal Gaiva, is equivalent to an idolater. It says, because if someone is vain and rejects accepting counsel from others, well, then he rejects this interpretation of the Torah, rejects this interpretation of Nasa Odom. Well, if so, if Nasa Odom does not mean that, what then does it mean? That there is a plurality of gods, and Hashem was talking to another god. He says, yeah, kol ha-mizgoy, if somebody is a Baal Gaiva, then he rejects the interpretation that Hashem wanted to manifest humility so that we shall learn humility, because he doesn't believe in that, right? Then Nasa, there must be a plurality of gods. So he says, Kalam is go, Kilayv David is over, right? Anybody who is vain is therefore equivalent to an idolater.
God can only talk to another god.
Very good.
Kol ele toldos ha-gaiva ha-meshiva ha-chomimoch o-choyl. All of these are the consequences of this vanity and conceit that sets back the wisdom of sages. V'daita misakalis, and perverts their thinking. Misira lev roshei chachma. It can remove the wisdom of and deter the hearts of the greatest of wise men. V'avti Talmidim Shalashim Hulkotzolcham, even students who have not yet had adequate training, Shekim At Shenitkiho Enehem, they have just barely opened their eyes in their subject that they're learning, Kvachachmechachomim Shavim Mohem Maliva. They already consider themselves the wisest of the wise. He says that is what vanity can do. V'al Kulam Ne'emer, and on all of these, Shlomo HaMelech says, Toyavas Hashem kol givaleib, that those that are vain and conceited in their hearts are an abomination before Hashem. The Baal Shem Tov said that the Posik says, In Yisosav Ishbe Misdorim, can a person conceal himself in hiding places? Va'ani lo yarenu, and I will not see him, Ne'um Hashem, is the word of Hashem. So the Baal Shem says, here's what the pasuk means. In Yisosav Ishbe Misdorim, if a person conceals himself and doesn't manifest himself, manifest any gaiva at all externally. However, within himself, va'ani, is the ego, right? And there's the conceit concealed with himself, like Ramchal says here, it is a non-manifested gaiva. But the person thinks of himself as the greatest. La'arenu, Hashem. Hashem says, I don't want to see him. I don't want to have anything to do with him. However, if a person who conceals himself is vani loy, negates his ego, then I don't know much. Hashem says, him I will say. Umikulam tzorich shiyinoke haroitza b'midas hanakiyus. A person who wishes to cleanse himself from all defects of contamination, from gaiva, must cleanse himself from all of these various types of gaiva, vanity that we have enumerated. V'yeda v'yovin, and he should know and understand, ki eina ha-gaiva ela livorin mamish, that vanity is nothing other than a total blindness. Asher ein seichel odam roya chesronoysov umakim chisusoy. It will cause a person to be totally oblivious of his own faults. He will not recognize his defects. She'ilo hoya yochel liros v'hoya makir emes, if a person could see and recognize the truth, he would separate himself and distance himself from all of these wrong and pervert ways. Now, it is told, I think, of Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, when he saw somebody, Erev Yom Kippur, by the Shemoneh Esrei, after the said Al Chetz, that the individual was tearfully saying, Ofer ani b'chaya, I am dust in my lifetime. V'kal v'chayma b'misosi, so much more after I will die. And it's the ultimate expression of the awareness of one's nothingness. Later on that night, when it came out to giving out the kibbutzim, the honors of taking out the Sifrei Torah by Kol Nidre, and he wasn't called up to take out a Sefer Torah, he became furious. How come he was overlooked? How come they didn't give him this COVID? So Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz went over to him and he said, did you go to Mikveh today, Erev Yom Kippur? The man says, well, what do you think? Of course I went to Mikveh. Oh, he said, I didn't understand. I thought you didn't. He said, because you see, I heard you before in the Shemoneh Esrei. You were saying so fervently, Ofer ani b'chaya, that you're dust and you're nothing. And now I see that, you know, you consider yourself so important that if they didn't give you the proper honor, you know, you're offended. It's not you didn't get your due dignity. He said, you see, dust sometimes it's carried by the wind and it's blown very high. He says, but what happens if you want the dust to stay down? You spring a little water on it, right, on the floor, right, and that will cause the dust to settle so that the wind doesn't blow it up. He said, so I thought, you know, you were telling me how you were dust and nothing but dust. And so I assume, why would you have, if you had been in the mikveh and you had water put on you, you know, why would you suddenly be rising so high? He says, well, I assume that it must be that you had not gone to mikveh, you didn't have any water on you, so the wind blew you up high elevations. But this is the kind of self-deception a person can be subject to. That he can cry with bitter tears, Ofani v'chaya, I'm nothing but dust. And later on, if somebody steps on his honor, he becomes violently angry. If you're nothing but us, so what are you violently angry for? A chosid ones came in, they say it was to Rav Avraham Malach, and he sensed in him that this person was conceited, vain, whatever. So instead of talking to him, he turned around and looked out the window and just kept on staring out the window for a while. Then he turns back to this person. He says, you know, I'm looking out at that window. Look at that big hill. All it is really a pile of dust. So how come it thinks it's so big? And the person realizes that he's only a handful of dust. Then there's no reason to consider oneself vain. We will continue elaborating on the importance of avoiding gaiva, when we get to discussion of the trait of humility, because true humility is so difficult to achieve, it is of the latter character traits. We have to perfect some other traits before we can come to a true anova of self-effacement.
True humility, really feeling like dust before other men, or feeling like dust before Hashem? I mean, we've talked before about realizing that it's not you that got you these qualities or talents or abilities, whatever it is, but recognition of the fact that you have it.
Well, the Torah tells about Moshe Rabbeinu, Va'ish Moshe Onov Meyoid, Moshe was extremely humble. Mikol Ha'odam Asher Al Pnei Adama. Even more than any other person. And the Mefarshim say that he was not only humble before Hashem, but he was humble before every other person. And that Moshe Rabbeinu had said, if anyone else had been given my gifts and my talents and put in my position, he would have done more with it than I did.
Now, if because of your position you've been slighted by someone, is it inappropriate to...
Not in defense of the position.
I don't mean like a melech, but because of another position you may be in.
It depends. An individual has the responsibility to defend the authority of his position. We see that Hillel was a onov, an absolute humble person, and yet when it came to the authority of his position, he insisted on the position being respected. So it's not only a question of the mouth, but anyone who has an obligation to the authority of his position. Right? However, that should be understood as such and not allowed to affect one's person. The Tzemach Tzedek was once on a trip and had taken his son, the Marash, along with him. Marash was a child. And whenever the Tzemach Tzedek came, he was received with great deal of honor. And the Marash wrote a letter back home describing how father had been so honorably received in all the communities. When the Tzemach Tzedek came home, he found the letter and he called the Marash in and he said, my blood was spilling like water, right? And you enjoyed that. There's a moshel of a king who wanted to see what was going on within his kingdom. And so he disguised himself as a commoner. Actually, he disguised himself as a foot soldier. Nobody would pay attention to him. Right? But he took one of his officers along with him. Right? So here he was disguised as an ordinary soldier, and the officer that was a captain or whatever who was walking along with him and who was not allowed to let on that this is the king, and so that the king would then be able to observe what went on. And wherever they went, everybody got up and saluted the officer, and the officer just it killed them. They're saluting me, they don't know who it is that I'm walking with, and they're giving me the honor. He says, if a person realizes that Hashem is always present, right, then any covet that is given to him eats away at his heart. Right? How come people are giving me covet when it's like the ordinary, the person who looks like the foot soldier, right, being totally ignored? and the honor giving to the officer when the officer knows that the king is with him. That is how one should have an attitude toward COVID and what humility is about.
Truman is a good example of honor for the office. And the other MacArthur.
Yes, you're in a responsible position. You have to take have to wield the authority.
It's okay to get angry because you're supposed to, not because you're
angry. Now we will
angry.
Have to see about angry. Unedaber ata min akas. Now we will speak about anger. Hine yesh haragzon, there is the person who is furious. She'amru alov, and about him the Talmud says, kol hakoyes, anyone who becomes furious, kilo oivet avodezora, it is equivalent to someone who worships idols. Vehu, and this is the type of person, hanichos, that becomes furious, al kol davar she'asa neged ritzono, anytime anybody frustrates his will. Umismale chema, and becomes full with wrath, ad shekvar liboy bali imoy v'atzosa nivola, that he loses control of himself and his good judgment vanishes.
Why does it compare it to worshipping Avodah Zarah?
Well, we'll see that in a moment.
Yeah. Pardon me? You deny Hashgacha Pratit?
Well, it's a denial of Hashgacha, but there are other reasons why this is Avodah Zarah also. Comparable to Avodah Zarah. But certainly, the simile of Kilo Avodah Zarah is intended to magnify the evil of fury. Now, we should be aware that we're not talking about the feeling of anger or irritation when someone is frustrated, when someone is provoked. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about wrath and fury.
He's talking about losing it.
Losing control. V'hine ish kazeh, a person such as this, kedai l'hachivay l'molein yachadis b'yodah. He is capable of destroying the entire world if he has the capacity to do it. Because good judgment and sensibility loses all power over him. And he loses all reason. Like any predatory animal. All of Nemar, and about him it is said in Eev, Toirev Navshe Ba'apoi, Halaman Chotei Ozavores, you who tear your soul in your wrath, do you believe that the earth shall become desolate because of you? You ready to destroy the earth with your wrath? V'hu kal vaday la'avar kol min aver sheboilam im chavoset v'yomahem. And he is capable of transgressing all the sins in the world if it comes to his hand. Ki kvar ein lo minia acha, because there is nothing that motivates him and nothing that controls him. The only thing that rules him is his wrath, and it will take him wherever, it will make him go wherever it leads him.
We don't have lady presidents.
We see even in Torah that when the Torah speaks about Moshe Rabbeinu, and the greatest of all humans that ever lived, that there were three occasions where Moshe Rabbeinu was angry, and even though in all three situations he was provoked and his anger was justified, that nevertheless it says that if a person is a Novi and he becomes furious, he loses his Nevuah. If he is a wise person, he loses his wisdom when anger takes over. And this is why the Ramban says that when it happened that the Bnei Yisrael, that the Israelites asked for water the second time, and Hashem told Moshe to speak to the rock, and Moshe hit the rock with the staff, that he was punished for this, the worst punishment that possibly could have happened to Moshe Rabbeinu, not to give him his will to go into as a soul, which was the worst punishment. And the question is obvious, you know, punishment has to fit the crime. Okay? Now, let's assume that Moshe deviated from what Hashem said. Hashem said to speak to the rock and hit him. Good, so he should, if Hashem wants to punish him, give him an appropriate punishment. But to give him the worst possible thing, I meant that to Moshe that was capital punishment. Right? Depriving him after 40 years of painful leadership, and all he wanted to do is set one foot across, and that's all Hashem said, no, because of this. So the Ramban says, any other avera, Moshe Rabbeinu would not have been punished so severely. But this was because he became angry and he lost control. And he screamed at them, Shimon HaMoirim, you rebellious people. And it was because of his losing control and his anger that he was punished. And in other words, Hashem said, look, I will overlook everything, but I'm not going to overlook loss of control. Because if that made Moshe Rabbeinu, he made him an example of how severe the consequences of wrath are. And gave him the worst possible punishment to get the point across, you don't lose control, no matter how provoked you are. There's no losing control. Because if you lose control, and if you permit that, then anything can happen. And this is why he says, losing control, an individual will do anything, including Avodah Zarah. He'll rebel against Hashem. Fury will lead you to anything. I think psychologically it's well established also that when a person gets into a state of anger and fury, then all defenses and all restraints go, and he's at that point capable of committing the worst kind of offenses. Continued next time. Ramchal is continuing now with the evils of losing oneself in anger. He has said that a person who becomes furious and allows his anger to overtake him loses control of everything, and there's virtually nothing that he cannot do in a moment of anger, simply because there's absolutely no control. And he talked about the first level of anger, the highest level of anger, where a person is furious enough to break things and attack people, etc. And he says there's a lesser type of anger, which is also bad. V'yesh kasen rochek mizeh. There is another type who is not quite as far gone as this person. V'hu shalai al kol davar asher v'yeh shalai kirtzoinoi. Im koten v'im kodo yivarapai. This is a person who will not become aroused to fury for every little thing that frustrates him or every little thing that provokes him. However, if he is brought to that boiling point, then he is apt to lose control. Essentially, he's saying, look, there is a kindling temperature for paper, and there's a kindling temperature for wood or other flammable items. Now, a tiny spark will set the paper afire. It has a very low kindling point. A tiny spark will not set a great big log on fire. But if you give it enough heat, it'll burn just like the paper will. And he describes these two types. The one who he had mentioned in the first paragraph, which he said yesterday, is someone who becomes easily provoked and for every little thing will fly off the handle. And then he says that there's another person who may not be as fragile as the first person, but that's only insofar that it takes more to provoke him. However, once he is provoked, then he loses it just as the other person is. And the Chachamim describe this person and label him as kosher lichos v'kosher lirtzos. He is difficult to incite, but he's also difficult to appease. Even though it's not quite as bad as the first person who jumps off, flies off the handle at every little provocation, but this is also a person who has a bad trait of anger. Because when he does become angry, he is as liable to do things that are destructive as the other person. And later on, he cannot take it back. And this is something that we find so tragic about anger, that the moment when you lose your judgment, you do things that you later on regret having said, having done, but it's simply too late. There's no way of retracting it. There's still another level, somewhat lesser than that. This is somebody who will not become easily provoked. And even when he is provoked, he won't manifest anger in fury or violence. And he won't do anything that is manifestly stupid. But he hangs on to an anger, he hangs on to a grudge. And it's true, he's not as vulnerable to destructive behavior as the first two that we mentioned that simply lose control of themselves. But certainly this one too, we cannot consider him clean of anger, free of anger. We cannot even give him the attribute of being watchful, because he is not exploding. Why is that? As long as the anger moves him and makes an impression upon him, he is still not excluded from the category of kasan, of an angry person. I've often said that one of the things that has been most helpful in understanding midas is to watch the recovery of an alcoholic. And the reason for that is that these are people who have come to a crisis in life where it has become absolutely essential for survival that they make some personality changes. I remember a gentleman who was a very fine attorney. He was a corporate attorney. Had a very severe drinking problem, and fortunately he recovered, became involved in the recovery of AA. And then after 2 years of his recovery, the corporation for which he worked underwent an internal shakeup, and he happened to be with the group that was ousted. Now, during his years of drinking, he had never managed to put together 2 cents because everything was squandered. And so he found himself now without a job, and had a family to support, and he did not have a clientele because he never was in the usual practice of law. Shortly after that, a group of people with money to invest got together, and they wanted to open a chain of retail stores, retail cheese outlets. And they engaged him as the one to put it all together. They put up the money, which he did not have, and he was supposed to put up the expertise. And they made him president of the corporation. And he was thrilled to have this opportunity, and interesting, the day he met me, he told me about this. He says, "Now all I need is a good architect." And I said, "Hey, I just discharged somebody last week, a very fine architect, and discharged him from the rehabilitation center, a recovering alcoholic." He says, "Good." So the two got together and did a fantastic job. They opened up 3 retail outlets, 2 in Pennsylvania, 1 outside. And as soon as these 3 got going, these guys who put up the money got together and they voted them out. And it was clear that this whole thing was a put-up. They needed someone to do the job for them, and then they threw him out. Well, he had a case against them, of course, but it would be forever and ever until that case came to court. And in the meantime, he did not have anything to support his family. I remember once meeting him in the hall, in the lobby of the hospital. And I asked him, what brings you here? And he said, I'm here on a court commitment case. Because according to the Mental Health Act, if a patient was to be committed, the county provided an attorney to look after the patient's interest. And at that time, the attorney would get $150 for representing the patient. Now, these jobs were taken by young attorneys who were just out of school and who had not yet gotten into practice. Here was a man who had had jobs in the six figures, right? And it was scraping the bottom of the barrel. So I asked them, how are you adjusting to this? And his answer was, look, I'm very bitter about this. The first thing that happened to him is one of those things that happen in business life. But the second thing was clearly deceptive and clearly exploiting him. He says, I'm very bitter about this and I'm full of resentments, but I will take my resentments to an AA meeting tonight and drop them off there. Because I know that if I don't do that, I'll drink again. And I felt at that point that this person was very fortunate. He had an indicator that showed him what emotions he must dispose of. Because if he did not rid himself, divest himself of carrying resentments, he knew this would lead him to drinking. So he had to find some way to do it. And his way was to go to a meeting, talk about it, and somehow or other get over it for the next day or two. I wonder, what about people who don't have drinking problems? What do they do when they are provoked and they carry grudges and bear resentments? Right? Inasmuch as there is nothing as dramatic as getting severely drunk to show them how destructive their bearing grudges and bearing resentments is, they'll walk around with it. Right? And it'll eat at their guts, and they'll develop migraines and high blood pressure and coronary artery disease and all the other things that bearing resentments brings with it, because obviously it doesn't do any good. The anger is not discharged for whatever reason. I felt that this individual was fortunate. He had a indicator that showed him, I've got to get rid of this, it's destructive. And for those people who don't have that kind of indicator, if they could only know how destructive it is to bear resentments and to walk around with all of that anger stirred up in you. And this is the kind of thing that causes severe psychosomatic problems, they would also look for some way to rid themselves of it. So this is what he talks about. Shlomo HaMelech says, Chas b'chek ksilin yanuach. Anger rests. Yanuach, it rests. It stays in the bosom of fools. What do you mean it stays in the bosom of fools? Because a person who is wiser than that will find some way to divest himself of it. But I don't need this. Right? It's having invested in something, right, and you find the investment's going down and hanging on to it. Right? Cut your losses. So, Kaspik Chekstil of Yanuach is that a fool is not wise enough to rid himself of resentments.
What is the purpose of this catalog? I mean, right now he has a catalog of needle throws.
Clearly to tell you that, look, you must get rid of them. This is the Nikias. This is how you must divest yourself.
It's one thing to say this is what they are, and this is another thing to say this is how. I mean,
oh, sorry. Well, we'll come to a moment. We'll talk a little bit about how it should be done. V'yesh oid pochus mizeh. There is still one further category. V'hu shekoshe lichos, a person who is difficult to provoke. V'chasoi loy lahashchis loy lachale el kasmuot. And when he does become angry, he gets rid of it quickly. And he can divest himself. The chamazama, and how long does he hang on to his anger? Rega velo yosa. Just momentarily. Dainu. He has a normal reaction. Mishar shakos misoyra bay beteva. From the moment that he becomes provoked and aroused to anger, which is a normal physiologic response. Until the moment that his good judgment takes over and says, hey, look, stupid. Yeah. What are you going to get angry about? Yeah. Get rid of it. This is what the Chachamim praised, where they said, a person who is difficult to bring into wrath, and easy to appease. This is a good trait. Why? It says that's a natural phenomenon that, you know, you're provoked, you're going to get angry. I'm not saying you've got control over that. He says, but what you do with the anger, right? And if he can become master over his anger, that even when he is provoked, he doesn't let it develop into a kind of chain reaction where anger provokes anger provokes anger till it gets to an explosive state. That even when he is aroused, even to a minor degree of anger, he'll even divest himself of that, get rid of it, but he'll see that it passes over. That is truly praiseworthy. The Yom Rezal and the Chachamim said, Tola Eretz al Belima, that he, when the Pesuk says that Hashem suspends the world on nothingness, he says, what is the expression Belima? Belima can mean nothingness. It can also mean Boilem, one who restrains, one who closes his mouth. Eino Oila Miskayim, the virtue of the world is that the world stands in the schus of the merit, someone who closes his mouth at a time of argument, meaning that he is provoked to anger, and he closes his mouth and doesn't respond. And there the Chachamim say, a person who hears himself insulted and does not respond in wrath, on him the Pesuk says, Ve'yehavav kitzeis Hashem ishbugvarasa. They are the beloved of Hashem. Now, ways to do this. First of all, it is told that someone, one of the Talmidim, saw the Chofetz Chaim several times going into the Smedrash late at night. And so he hid under a bench to see what happens when the Chofetz Chaim goes in, when nobody's there, what he's doing. And he saw that he went over to the Oven Kodesh and opened the Oven Kodesh and was crying to Hashem to prevent him from kas, to prevent him from anger. That was his tefillah. The old business about count to ten first. Delay. Learn not to respond. Don't be an automaton that reacts reflexly. Not saying you shouldn't get angry. Wait a few minutes. Give yourself a chance to think. The Rebbe of Alexander had set in a kind of behavior mod kind of thing. That any time somebody provoked him, he would say, I've got to put on my other kapota. This isn't the anger kapota. Right? I don't get, in these garments, I don't get angry, right? And from the time that he went to put on the other kapota, right? Meanwhile, he put in a barrier. He put in a 10-second delay. The Tzemach Tzedek, when he was provoked to anger, used to take out the Shulchan Aruch to learn Hilchos Avodah Zarah. Right? Why? He says, because the Gemara says that Kol HaKoyes Ki Lo Avodah Zarah, right? That anybody who loses himself is equivalent to someone who is Avodah Zarah, who worships idols. He says, there's all kinds of halachos in Avodah Zarah. What is Avodah Zarah? What is not? What are you permitted to do? What are you not permitted to do? So he says, so how are we going to get angry before learning the halachos? So he put in that kind of buffer. So there are ways, but it takes a little avodah. That's what this sefer is all about. Yeah? We are not to be dominated by our reflex actions. Now, there's no question that when you feel provoked, there is a very essentially a traumatic change that happens. You can feel it happening. Whether the blood does or does not rush to your head, you feel a physiologic change. And at that moment, you have to sit down and keep quiet. That is not the moment to open one's mouth. And as we said yesterday, the Torah takes great pains to point out that Moshe Rabbeinu erred 3 times, and each time it was because he was angry. Moshe Rabbeinu, when the man came down, he told the people, do not leave the man over for the next day. Right? And so people did leave over the man for the next day, and it rotted and became wormy. Moshe got angry at them. What happens the next few psukim? Right? Moshe, the man comes down in a double portion Friday, and everybody says, hey, how come we got more than we need? And Moshe says, yeah, Hashem said that that's the way it would be. And the Medrash says, he forgot to tell him. He forgot to tell him the halacha because he had been angry. And this is why we said anger is not a question that if you're anger, that if you violate the midah of anger, therefore you will be punished, etc. It's a natural conclusion that no matter why you get angry, even for just reasons, all 3 times Moshe Rabbeinu was angry, it was for just reasons. And nevertheless, even though it was justified, the reaction is the effect of the consequence is just the same. Anger causes a suspension of judgment, and the Gemara says if he's a chacham, he loses his wisdom. If he's a novi, he loses his prophecy. Torah is, and nevuah and chachma are different than all other kinds of wisdoms and sciences. And that is that they depend on the keli that they're in, that depend on the utensil which contains them, which is the person himself. When he has improper character traits, improper midas, cannot produce good wisdom and good Torah. And the Torah goes out of its way to show us that this happened even to Moshe Rabbeinu. So nobody should say, I am not vulnerable. Omnom, we're not finished yet. There's still something better than this last person who was so praiseworthy. Midosai shel Hillel Hazoken, the trait of Hillel, Oila al Kalela, was superior to all of these. Shekra lehoya makpid al shum dover, nothing was able to provoke him. Ve'afilus his oireru shel kas le'nasavoy. He didn't even become aroused to anger. Zehu vaday anoki min akas mekel v'kel. This is an individual who's totally free of anger. Now the Gemara says about Hillel that there was somebody who says, I am going to provoke him. And so he went by Hillel's house and he says, Where's Hillel? And Hillel comes out, and so he starts bothering him with stupid questions. How come the Bavliim have round heads instead of oval heads? Right? And no matter how hard it tried to provoke him, Hillel kept his cool. And later on he said to him, if you're Hillel, may there not be many like you. He says, why? He says, because of you I lost a bet. I have bet somebody that I'd be able to promote you. Right? And Hillel did not allow himself to become angry. Now, I don't remember who said this, that the Perek says, Siog lachochma shtika. Silence is a siog, a fence, as it were, a protection for chochma, for wisdom. What kind of silence? Doesn't mean silence that a person should not speak at all. It's talking about when silence is necessary, as we've said, haboy limpiv v'shas meriva, a person who can be master over himself and keep silent at a time when he's provoked. As we said, Hashemeach el posav eino oina, a person who hears himself insulted and doesn't respond, that is the shtika that we're talking about. That is the praiseworthy silence. Now, says so siog lachochma shtika, that kind of silence is a protection for wisdom. Right? So what is wisdom itself? If that's the siog, the protection for wisdom, then what does wisdom consist of? He says wisdom consists of what Hillel did. Wisdom consists of not getting angry. And there the question is that possible for a person to reach that stage of not getting angry, inasmuch as it is a normal trait? And the answer is, by himself a person cannot do it. But that's why the Chofetz Chaim went into the Ohren Kodesh every night to ask of Rabbeinu Shel Olam, take it away from me. That's interesting, that in the recovery program in AA, one of the 12 steps is that a person makes a list of all of his negative character traits and does whatever is necessary to rid himself of them. And he says, we became perfectly ready to have God rid us of these traits. What do you mean, became perfectly ready? I did whatever I could that was within my power to rid myself of these traits. Then what is the next step? I ask God to remove them from me. Meaning, a realization, there are things that I cannot possibly eradicate myself. This is physiologic. You know, somebody provokes me, somebody irritates me, provokes me, I get angry. I can't help that. What I can do is all the steps that we talked before, right? I can try and prevent my reaction. That I can do. Right? Whether like it's a machzadik to take out the halchasoy dezorah, whether to put on another kapota. I was once sitting with my uncle, the Baba Vareb, and this is when he was on the west side, West 85th Street, this was in 1948. The way the setup was, he had a telephone in his office. There was another extension to the same phone upstairs where some family members lived. This was right after the war when the family had come over. People who spoke upstairs on the phone had a little button that when you turned the button, the downstairs phone would be cut off. And it was a rather foolish setup, but that's the way it was. And the Rov had asked the family members, look, when you pick up the phone, and if you want to have a private conversation, I've got no problem with it, but please, before you turn that button, listen to whether I'm talking or not. Don't cut me off in the middle of a conversation. And yet, it was natural to them. They'd go pick up the receiver, turn the button. And numerous times he'd ask them. Anyway, one time I was sitting in his study, and he received a call from the gentleman who was the president of the newly founded Bavar Yeshiva. And he was carrying on a conversation, which was rather important. All of a sudden, he stops, very quietly puts the receiver down, looks out the window, and starts drumming on the table. And starts singing a little Nick, kind of singing a little tune to himself. I sat there watching this, and he kept down for a few minutes, you know, drumming on the table and singing a Nick. And after a few minutes, he says to me, "No, let's go up and tell them that it's not right to cut the telephone off." Now, the normal reaction would have been, you know, you run up and you scream, you know, "What in the blazes did you do? I told you 1,001 times." And here it happened to be a quite important conversation. That wasn't the way to do it. You know? And I learned something from that. You know, I was a kid that time, but I learned something from that. You put in a insulation, you put in a barrier. That we can do. That is within power to do. But the reflex reaction of, not the reflex reaction, the sensation of being angry, that is something that is not within our power. And there is what we have to ask Hashem to take care of, remove from us. Right? If we realize, hey, look, I don't need this trait, it's bad, I want to get rid of it, take it away from me. We can ask Hashem. Now, sometimes Hashem may say, hey, look, no, I don't want to take it away from you. I want you still to be able to learn how to master. Right? You're not ready to remove it yet. So this is why the program is so beautifully constructed in recovery. Become ready to have God remove these character traits. That's the first part of it. Then, after you're ready, after you've done all the kinds of things that you can, then you can ask God to remove these character defects. And that's the way that everybody should do it also. We learn to prevent a explosive reaction, and after that, once we've achieved that degree of mastery, we can come to where Hillel was, which I'm sure Hillel came to ultimately by prayer, of asking Hashem to remove it. To be continued.